Hello, assalamu alaikum. Are you here for this lecture? Yes. So maybe you come closer because you are so far and it's not clear who is here for what. So I can feel your warmth. Good. Ciao. Thank you. I'm born in Palestine, and I will not tell you since when, but long, long time ago. And I'm born with the memory of my grandfather and my grandmother saying, never become a refugee. My grandfather's survived the Nakba, which is the Palestinian catastrophe in 1948, what is called the establishment of the State of Israel, where in this time, my tribe lost more than 700 people out of 1,200 people. The rest had to flee to a church and become Christians for 3 months so they can stay alive. And so my grandmother was always telling me, never become a refugee. Never do it. You may lose your life, but don't lose your dignity. I grew up and I survived the first intifada in the late 80s. As a teenager, found myself already in the age of 15 in jail. When I was going with my friends against the occupation, when we understood what is the Israeli occupation and we went out to resist. Many of my friends already left the country. Just to say, I'm a Palestinian who grew up inside Israel. This means that I'm forced to carry the Israeli identity. So already in the first intifada, many of my friends who did not feel hope and home left the country, and I stayed. So I survived the first intifada, and then in the year 2000, I was about to survive the second intifada. And always with this mantra from my grandfather, grandmother, never become a refugee. It was already in the early 90s when I met the uncles of my parents who flee in 1948 and became refugees in Jordan, and they could see their life in refugee camps. And I understood, I will never become a refugee. This life I don't want to live. Might be that I'm humiliated in Israel and I'm a second-class citizen, but at least I'm home and I will never leave my country. But this decision was already shaken in the second intifada, where I found myself living in Jerusalem, working as a nurse and my belly growing with a child. And slowly I understood if I want to continue with this child, as a gift to life, then I have to find another life for her. And already when my child was 2 years old and she faced the first time to be called Arab in Jerusalem, I thought, I have to find another solution. But I knew that I don't want to leave. And I loved Palestine so much, I didn't want to live anywhere else. And still, I understood that but with the second intifada, with growing a child, I came to my limits. I came to my limits to find a place and another form of life that can include all the questions of my life. Yeah, so I started a journey. Now I spend most of my time between Portugal and Palestine. In Palestine, I'm supporting farmers and students to live another life, to live a sustainable life where we can step out of this system that make us controllable and governable, and teach the students there how to live a life that it's reclaiming our resources in water, energy, food, but also social structures that we create trust between us, so we will never can be governable by the outside system, by the occupation. But in the same time, I spent half of my life growing my child, who's 15 now, where I promised that she has to have another chance in life and not to go through the same traumas that I went through. So she's growing up in Portugal in a community that it's putting in its core finding an alternative life, an alternative life to this system that makes us governable and small units of consuming. And in the core of this community, we are looking for different social life structures that allows trust, that allows reconciliation between man and woman. Where in the core of it, that as long as there is war between the genders, there will be no peace on earth. And it took me time to make the link between the war between the genders and the global war that we are living in. I wanted to address in this talk the issue of refugees. I'm not a refugee. Although I left my country almost voluntarily, almost I had the privilege to say I leave, and I was immediately home in another community, but I'm not a refugee like the refugees who are coming now, knocking on the doors of Europe because of war. I'm a refugee just like each one of you who is fleeing the system that is not making us happy. We are, I guess you are all fleeing a system and looking for a system, a different system, that where your life has a meaning, where your energy has an output, where your dreams can be fulfilled and not you, you are not always cheated by a system who is governing us and making us consuming units. So we are all refugees. And when addressing the issue of refugees, the other refugees, our brothers and sisters who are coming from Africa because of climate or because of poverty, because of war coming from the Middle East, they are in a different situation. They are forced to leave their countries because of war and rescuing their lives. And I wanted to address the issue of Eros. What does it mean when these people who are coming from oppressed countries, from oppressed systems of life, as myself, as I grew up also in Palestine, and with all the privilege that I had, I still was a person, as a woman, living in a system that oppressing my expression of life. In Palestine, I have to dress in a certain way. As a woman, I have to walk in a certain way. I have to speak in a certain way. I'm not a free being, for sure. And these people, when they are growing up under these regimes, and they come to Europe with the dream, with the promise that Eros is free here, that my personal freedom is possible here, that sexuality is possible here. And then they are in a clash of civilizations like Huntington called it, but it's even deeper. The West is always sending signals that sexuality, Eros, is free. I mean, maybe you look at yourself here. It's a bit cold and rainy today, so we are covered with many layers, but when it's the sun is shining and beautiful summer, you walk free. What we call it in Arabic, not modest. You show yourself, you show your life, you want to celebrate life, and this is what is supposed to be also in Arab countries. But we are sending signals that as if Eros and sexuality would be free, but in reality, it is not. I will come back to this point. I want to say also that Okay, maybe we continue with this point. So I claim that Eros in the Western country is also not free. I want to say that we are all in humanity are under the clothes of patriarchy. In the core of patriarchy is the, and all the systems that comes after it, if it's colonialism, capitalism, and globalization, in the core of it is the control of human beings and make them consuming entities, individual consuming entities, so they can be governable. In the core of it, in the core of this system, is cutting the individual from the resources around, cutting us from nature, cutting us from divine sources, and cutting us from our inner sources. And in our inner sources, it is the source of life, of eros, of sexuality. So there is the system of religion, of capitalism, that tells us you can love, you can practice sexuality only according to certain pattern, only in marriage, only with your fellows, with your same culture or same religion or same group. In the core of all these systems are telling us, like every religion, no matter what is it, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, the first thing that they will tell you, with whom you make love. Like the first invention of religion is with whom you make love and according to what. So we are already born where our sexuality and our expression of life is dictated, is determined by a certain system. Yet these refugees come from the same line. Maybe patriarchy and the oppression of sexuality in the Arab world is more severe for sure. Women in Saudi cannot walk out the street if the head is revealed. They cannot drive a car, they cannot, many things. If I walk in Palestine with a skirt that it's above my knee, the whole street will be running behind me. And only just now in Nablus, it's the month of Ramadan now, and just a week ago, a young woman of 17 was walking with her mother down the street in Nablus in the middle of the day, and her skirt was a little bit short, a little bit, and this created a demonstration. This created a demonstration because people tried to spoke with her not nice, the mother reacted, the father then reacted, it became a small conflict that became a big demonstration in the street, and people were asking, is this all because of a short skirt? But the short skirt is a symbol of life that it's so oppressed. So these people come from the Arab countries where it is so oppressed, and they come to the West where it is supposed to be free. When I went to Lesbos and I was working with the refugees, I met many, many, many families, lots of big families that flee together. They had to walk hundreds of kilometers. Many of them lost many of their friends in front of their eyes, trying to cross from Turkey to Lesbos. But what I saw mostly, I saw lots, hundreds and thousands of young men who grew up in Arab countries, who grew up in Africa, and they are coming to find another life. They are coming to find another future. And you could see them in Lesbos gathering, clustering all together. And with all the pain and the agony that they have, all the sorrow, in one moment they start dancing and expressing the joy of life and being alive, being rescued from this situation. And for sure, you see them already after the first load of pain is not there, they look around, and what do they look for? For girls, for women, which is the most natural thing. Which is the most natural thing for a person who is living oppressed all his life, believing that either you become a martyr following Islamic fanatic groups and then you explode yourself, and then there is virgins there in the beyond, 70 virgins, which is a totally twisted ideas of Islam. I'm a Muslim and Islam is not like this at all. But nevertheless, there is this twisting and this distorting in the thinking. So either you become a martyr and you explode yourself because all your energy or your sexual life energy cannot have an expression. So either you go to this and explode yourself, or you're all the time thinking, how do I go to the free world, to Europe? All the refugees in Lesbos, they want to go to Almania, to Germany. Because there is this illusion, or this, maybe before calling it an illusion, there is this promise. If I would go there, everything will be free. Everything that I was not allowed to have, I will have it there. And then they come here. They come here with this longing. They come here and they want to express themselves. And now maybe in this talk you will see me addressing more the men. I'm also an Arab woman and I love life and I love Eros, but I will not put it as a center of my talk, because the main issues that came now from facing the refugee crisis was actually the expression of the Arab men. And not only Arab men, but let's say refugees. But as an Arab, I want to address this issue of Arab men, because this is the background that I also come from, and I know it more. So these men come, and if we walk with them, they are in Berlin, they are in Cologne, and maybe all of you heard maybe around the New Year Eve about the issues that happened in Cologne. I don't know if they happened or not, or to which extent they happened, but it was the symptom of this clash in this issue is coming. When these refugees expressed their longings, and I want to say it's an oppressed longing, so it's a life energy that was oppressed for so long, and suddenly it comes out, and it comes out not in the best or the most nice way. No, it comes because it was captured for so long. And they look for contact, they try to make contact with the girls, with the women, they don't have the language, they don't have the cultural codes, and then they are accused of over jumps, of aggression, of sexual harassment, and so on. And then comes the other side of the thing, the reaction of the local communities, the reaction of the German society, the reaction of you. There's immediately comes this place of them and us. We are free. We are free. Our sexuality is free. We live a free sexual life. Eros is free in our society. They are the threat. They are the danger. They don't know how to do it. Better to keep it away from us. They are coming to steal our women. Ooh. They come to take our women, these black, brown, huge bodies of these Arabs, Africans. They come to take our women. And so how do we react? With fear, with rejection. And once this fear and rejection is activated, there is only separation. And my question is, how do we answer this crisis? The crisis of the refugees is another symptom of the global crisis that we are all going through. It's another system that needs us coming together and thinking together so we can answer it. And in my opinion, and in many, it is not by fear, and it's not by separation, not by rejection. But then what is the answer? Because we all want to live also a free life. I don't want to be the answer for the oppressed longings for an Arab or an African man. It's not me. I don't want to answer it. Okay, so how do we go on? They are here. And these longings are here. How do we go on? Okay. I don't know how do we go on practically or exactly in certain situations. I only know that we have to address the issue of eros and sexuality among us and the refugees, so we can give an answer for this global crisis that is happening. I claim if eros and sexuality would be free in Europe, in Germany, the answer for this crisis, the answer of the expressions of the longings of the refugees would be compassion. If we would live an erotical life that it is fulfilled, if we would know that we are not living in lies and in fear, and we see somebody else who is expressing his longings not in the most right way, not in a beautiful way, and we understand the background from where he is coming, the answer would be compassion. But since we don't live our life in a free way, and we don't have an answer, so the answer is rejection. And I claim that there's no way out from this. By rejecting the situation, there's no way out of it. And it needs another solutions. And I don't know what does it mean to integrate refugees in our system, because I claim also that the system that we are living in is already dying. It's dying in its economic systems, in the social system, and also in the political systems. And in order to reveal it, in order to give it a kick of life, we need to address social structures where we live in truth, also in our sexual issues. I want to address also another issue or another symptom where it made me feel so proud of hearing of the reactions of the German society welcoming refugees. When I was in Lesbos again and all the refugees were saying, I want to go to Almania, I want to go to Germany, I was very curious, why do they want to go especially to Germany? And for sure there was lots of in the news of Angela Merkel inviting them and lots of places where it was calling the refugees to come. But mainly what they were touched by was the expression of the civil society in Germany in so many places that was welcoming in every expression of giving clothes, giving aid, of supporting them, of opening so many spots for welcoming refugees. And these things were immediately transmitted through the social media to the refugees in Lesbos. And I remember I was sitting with many of these Arab men, and with every situation or example that was happening in Germany, they immediately got it, and there was like, you see, that's why I want to go to Germany, that's why I want to go to Almania. And I thought in that time, German people can be really proud. And I have many German friends where they said, you know, Aida, we Germans can never say we are proud. It's forbidden in our history. We shall not repeat again that we are proud. And for sure, I know a lot about the history of the Holocaust. And I thought, no, actually, part of the healing is that the German people can do feel proud of themselves on this way of reacting and giving a response to the refugee issue. There is a lot of things to be proud of and to be happy of this, of this response to it. And still how to finish it or how to complete it in issues that it's connected with social structures, with the issue of contact between men and women. On this, I don't have yet a response, and I think we all don't have a response yet. And this is what I'm challenging us in this, to find a response, to find a response to, yeah, to these social structures. The refugee crisis is a mirror to the state of humanity where we are standing. When they asked Noam Chomsky, what do you think our response for terrorism? What can we answer it? And I come from a state where terror is the language, whether it is from the occupation to my people or also from my people to the occupation. Using violence, using power, is the main expression of resisting. And me as a mother, I say, no, there's another way. There's another way to resist the situation that we are living in, not by fighting what exists, but by building a different life that we love. And so Noam Chomsky said, if you don't want terror, stop supporting it. And I asked myself, how do I support terror? How do you support terror? How do we here, how are we in our daily life supporting terror? I think it needs lots of power from ourselves to look in our lifestyle. How do we created our life of our consumption life? How do we created it in the misery of other people? How is it that our governments, your governments, in my case, I don't have a government, how these governments are supporting terror by dragging all the resources from other countries, whether it's Africa or the Middle East, and supplying for us a lifestyle that it's so dependent on these resources. And in order to maintain these resources coming to the Western lifestyle, these countries, Africa and the Middle East, have to be under suppression. They have to be. And the system found for many, many years systems of alliance there. If it's the royal family of this and that, and the government of this and that, who are alliance with the system of control that comes from the West. And the West, the Western life is so dependent on that there is war. If we want to stop terror, if we want to stop the waves of refugees, we have to stop the war. We have to change a lifestyle of us that it's so much depending on them under our control. And this, we have to face it. We have to face that each one of us is responsible for this situation. And I know that it's very difficult for us to acknowledge it, to say that our lifestyle is making other people in war. And that these refugees are coming, as Charles Eisenstein said it, a refugee is a person who is running behind his resources or claiming back his resources. So these people were taken from them by the war and the systems of control. And unfortunately, they are also coming here to reclaim it. And how do we answer? And the only answer that I see it in life is that we all relearn how to share, relearn how to integrate these people, not in the system that is dying and controlling us and them, but using the refugee crisis in making another system that worth living, a system where our water, energy, food, social structures is controlled by us, by the people. By creating models that are aligned with life, models of life and a lifestyle that is not dependent on oppressing any other being, any other life expression, but it is aligned with life. That where we harvest our water, we grow our food, we have our energy, and we are not controlled by a system from the outside that makes us consuming people. In such system, It's very easy to integrate people from other cultures, from other religions, from other background, because each person is aligned with a life that's aligned with nature, aligned with life. And without such lifestyle, we are always dependent on systems that wants us separated. A system that tells us the refugee who are coming now is a person who is coming to steal your job, steal your chance, steal your woman, your man. He's a person who's coming to take something from you. But if we take our courage to create a life that it's abundance, there is enough for everybody to share, there will be no fear. And fear is the main thing that making people controllable. Once fear is activated, separation is activated. Once separation is activated, there's enemies. You are my enemy, and I have to protect myself and my resources. And to break this chain is our responsibility. So I'm calling for using the refugee crisis and to take it as an elevator, as a wave for us all, everywhere, to create a system that worth living, to create a system that it's fair for all players, us, them, because in the end there is no us and them. When they asked Sri Aurobindo, Master, how do we deal with the others? And he said, the others? There's no others. So there's no others, it's us. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you very much, Aida, for a very inspiring talk. I'm sure there's some questions.
Hello. First of all, thanks a lot. That was very interesting and touching. I was wondering, at what level do you think that compassion can kick in instead of rejection in the light of, let's say, the events of New Year's in Cologne as a reaction to that? Do you want to, or can you share any ideas on that? Thank you.
Well, thank you for the question. I believe that compassion has more power than rejection. And I mean, it's like this. What does it mean to be in a state of compassion? To be in a state of compassion means that I know my longings, and I know that my erotical and sexual longings are sacred, and I want them to be expressed in a free way. And in a state of compassion, I know that this person is not living the state that I am in, but he's my human companion. And I want him to be with me, but he's not yet there. So what is the compassion in this moment? The compassion in this moment is understanding the longings, respecting them, but doesn't mean that I have to answer them on my body. So imagine you are in a situation as a woman, like me, if I would be in a situation of a train and suddenly a man is masturbating in front of me. How would I answer it? How would I answer it if my 15 years old child, girl, is sitting with me, next to me? How would I answer it? Yeah, it's a difficult situation, and it happened. So if I imagine myself in a state of compassion, I think the first thing that I would do, I would look into the man's eyes directly to his eyes. First of all, I will not be in a shock like, oh my God. I would first look into his eyes. And maybe at that moment I will find a wise sentence of saying, I see you. I see your longings. I see that you are passionate. I see that you are attracted, but this is not the way. Would you please stop? Maybe something like this, but the first place of compassion is that I see it, that he's not an ugly, he is not bad, he is not evil. I don't scream and come in a panic. Oh my God, oh my child, which is, it's an unfair situation. It's unfair. But what is the reaction to it? And I think if we are in a state, if we train the state of compassion, the goddess in that moment will tell you the exact behavior, how to do, what to do. Yeah, but so there's no recipe, but state of compassion is means that I see your longing, I respect it, I see that it was captured for so long, but this is not the way. And maybe I will reach a hand of saying what could be the way, but I don't have a quick answer to it.
Are there any other questions?
Hello, yeah. I just wanted to say about the thing you said about, losing your own stuff and the fear of not having enough to eat or something like this. So about the whole thing, they are going to take our jobs, our women, and so. And it's much more about sharing. Because if the whole world we are living on would live the lifestyle we're living in our rich Germany, we would need like 2.5 planets more. And so it's the only logical thing that follows is that we have to, yeah, kind of lower our lifestyle in Germany. And for many people, that's a huge thing, because when you are used to it, it's connected with fears. And it's not about letting your own stuff go. It's more about sharing. And it's an evolutionary fact that sharing and helping each other made us to the people we are today, and fighting is not the only way, because when people saw someone else drowning in a river or so, it is the fact that we live today is that we knew we have to help somebody else. And we see only at this festival that sharing can be much more and can create even more happiness. So if we focus on the sharing part, maybe that's a solution for not letting the fear overcome yourself.
Thank you for this comment, because you addressed the issue of the main fear of Western culture, where they would say, well, this means that I have to lower my lifestyle. And thank you for saying it in a courageous way. When they asked Gandhi about the resources, because this is a claim, always saying there's no enough for everybody. This is in the system, in the core of the system, there is limited resources. In Israel, there's no enough for Israelis and Palestinians. That's why Israel keeps the water and let us Palestinians dry with no water. Because the system is built on that there's no enough resources, which is a big lie. This is the biggest illusion. And Gandhi said, there is enough in the universe to cover everybody's needs, but not greed. Yeah, and when we are living in a life that it's greedy, when you have 10 jackets, the second jacket does not belong to you. I don't want to speak of the ninth jacket, but there is the second jacket already doesn't belong to you, belongs to somebody else. And it is about facing reality. We can also say we have to defend ourselves and create stronger European Union and Brexit or not Brexit or we can defend ourselves, we can make a wall around Europe, we can kill people not to come, but this is not the answer. The global systems are falling down. We can see symptoms of them falling down. Better to live already, to invest our courage in inventing a new system that it's fair for everybody, rather than holding on a system that it's dying and it will take us with it. Yeah. So sharing is one element, but it comes from a strategical thinking of, I don't need to lower my life, but I need to look what is in my life. I am taking it as compensation for other needs that are not expressed. Is all the things that I have in my life are really needed, or it's I just have the means and the money and I can spend it. Yeah, I can spend it. And if I pause a minute, there is a way to live a life that it's fulfilling, but it's not so immediately connected with material fulfillment. Because again, the system is built on this, that feed us with the material fulfillment, but our spiritual needs, our social needs, our erotical needs, are they answered? Are we happy in this system? No. You can see it. How many of us, we go to the malls to buy things because we are not happy in love. We go and consume things because we are not able to speak with our parents. How many things we do out of consumption and compensation rather on fulfillment? What does fulfill us? Human contact, respect, safety, love, freedom. This is what fulfilled us, and this we can do it with one genes or with 101 genes.
Hello, I just got like one statement that I find it difficult that you describe two situations. One time when the person masturbating in front of you and your girl, and the other one were the accidents in Köln. And you always, or it seemed to me that you were putting emphasis on the way the victims should deal with the situation, to be open-minded. And I find that kind of difficult to just put it on one side of the road. I mean, it's always both sides. If you're the aggressor, you're the one who's starting it, even if you have a background and everything. And I found that for myself, I would find it difficult with some people just came up to me and touched me wherever they want to. And that kind of bothered me a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this. I would never say that to put the blame only on one side, because in the main thing of my cause of life is that there is no victim perpetrator. We are all victims of the system, and we need to step out of it. And stepping out of it is not by blaming somebody and putting the right or wrong on somebody. But I want to say, yes, us, I include myself now in this. I think we have more of a possibility to react rather than a man that is doing it, and we think that he is the perpetrator in that moment. To flip the situation is not to tell him, you are a perpetrator and you are bad and I'm the victim, but actually becoming a creator in that moment. So in that moment, I give a hand, I give a solution, and I refuse to put him as a perpetrator or me as a victim. And still, what is the next step? It doesn't mean that we have to accept that this is the expression of refugees or people who are coming to Europe, and we just have to calm with it. No, I'm saying there's the first reaction of a chain of many things that have to be corrected. And I think also many of the refugees who will be integrated in the society, they will for sure understand that there is another way how to do it. I mean, look to the statistics of people who came from different cultures and became part of a new one. How is their behavior with the time? And in most of the cases, it's actually more into the positive side and adopting the local customs and behaviors than we would expect. Yeah, but my main goal of what I'm saying here today is that to look that our life in the Western life of our sexual, erotical life is not free, is not yet into a healed picture. And when somebody is coming from another culture and reminding us of how much this issue is not solved, the reaction is closing and rejecting. But if we would look into it and saying, our life, our sexual life is not in its healed picture yet, also them. So what can we together do to live a sexual life, an erotical life that it's healed? And I live in a community in Portugal, it's called Tamera, where in the core, it's the reconciliation between man and woman. It's in the core where we put Eros as a sacred power, where people express their sexual longings in public, in groups, where we deal with the issue of possession, of the issue of jealousy, of the issue of power between men and women, and we address it in a public way, because again, the main thing of the system that took the issue of love and sexuality and put it into the private sphere. What is happening between me and my man is in between closed doors. It's private. It's my issue. No? It's not a public issue. And also religion says all what happens between you and your man is a private issue. It's closed. Maybe you will speak with the imam or with the authority in the church, but it's not the issue for the public. And once we privatized the issue of love and sexuality, then we became controllable, because what is happening between us is between us. Nobody knows. And how is it to live social life where this issue is not private anymore? It's the same as if you want to consume or live a life that it is with so much consumption, it is not a private issue. Nobody can continue murdering and consuming Mother Earth saying that it's my private issue. No, it's not. It is a public issue. Yeah. So this is how to bring this life again to a public issue that it's open for all.
One more question.
Maybe it's not just a question. I want to share something. There are two things of cultural clash. So my father is also a refugee from Palestine, and my mother is from Germany. And they both had the dream of a love and a family, and it clashed. And it took me probably 20 years to understand that they both, their motivations was love and compassion, but they had different ideas of family. So it took me 20 years, even if this is my father and my mother, to understand that usually the core motivation for what I do is to express my inner light, love, for a better world. And this sometimes clashes and we have war. And the second thing that I want to point out, Moimi, you know this sentence, Gelegenheit macht Diebe. And it's a little bit referred to the question before that it's for both sides. I mean, I've been in Beirut the first time and I was walking around like a rich European. And so everybody came to me and asked me for money, and I feel a little bit pushed. And then I realized, okay, if I walk around like an open shop, the people come to me. And I also had a talk with a woman once that she said she sometimes feels scared to go alone in the night or whatever, and she doesn't feel good if the men are always staring on her. And then I said, hey, but you walk around with a very short skirt, and you like to dance really erotic, and this attracts probably the eyes of some people. And this is just a comment, probably also a little bit on the both sides. It's also always, I have to be aware what could my behavior could be a projection sheet where somebody with a longan can project on me. I don't want to say that, for example, in this situation on the New Year's Eve, that the women should not walk in a female way around, but that we here in Europe or all over the world can also try to be a little bit more aware what kind of invitation we give. It's a little bit like what Aida said, why do they think here in Europe we have a free life? So to be aware what, how we show up in both ways. And this is just my comment on this.
I guess in this, that you don't mean that women should be more modest in this, because as a feminist, I want that we dress as the same, like as we want, and to create a society where we are safe. Yeah. And yet I also agree with you, what does it mean if I walk like this, and when an invitation comes to me, there is another way of, like, when I walk like this and I know that I'm beautiful, then I know that it will come. And when it comes, how do I answer it? With rejection or with compassion? With understanding who I am, or to blame you? Why do you look at me? I mean, everybody would look on a beautiful thing, no? It's logic. And if you bring it in humor of saying, yes, thank you, I see it as you are honoring my beauty, but thank you, I don't feel like going with you. It's like simple, no? Simple, compassion, and not rejection. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to remind us of one very simple fact. We were talking so much about culture clashes and sexuality. I think there is absolutely no culture clash. There's just a clash between patriarchy and feminism. And if we look at all the statistics, we see that the absolutely clear majority of all the violations happen inside a family. So it's not the refugees. And I think we should be very aware of this fact. And I would just wanted to say that.
Thank you. Thank you. This I wouldn't even add to it. Yeah. Because what we want to unite all of us together is to end patriarchy and to give it an alternative life, in order to send something away by not fighting it, is by creating a culture that it's, as I said, it's fair for all players. And patriarchy definitely was not in fair for all players. Wish you a good day.